Radio WBOB.
The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Joining us now, Alfredo Ortiz. He is the CEO of Job Creators Network, which he had the vision to start, and also their affiliate, TaxCutsWork.com. Alfredo, great to have you, man.
John, it's great to have you. And boy, that West Virginia stop, wasn't that great, just seeing that optimism sky high in that room?
I had so much there. And you can feel, Alfredo, the enthusiasm building. This is why I think the Republicans are going to hold the House. You can't go to these rallies now and not feel it. I mean, that it was a Thursday afternoon. Place was out in the middle of nowhere in Wheeling.
Yeah.
And even in Wheeling, it was like beyond Wheeling. It was at that conference center. That place was packed, standing room only. The enthusiasm there was off the charts. But I got to tell you, Alfredo, you really did a great job in kind of laying out what the tax cuts mean and how they have translated into so many jobs. And I was excited to get you on today so that you could share some of what you said at the panel with our audience.
Well, John, you know, it's really funny. I think your listeners and you, and I certainly recall this. Remember, I think there was a certain person called Nancy Pelosi that said the tax cuts work was going to be the beginning of Armageddon. If you remember that, Armageddon.
Yes.
Well, I have to tell you this, John. If this is what you just listed off just before I got on the segment, if that describes Armageddon, give me Armageddon every single day, because this country is back and it's rolling. And when you look at what's happening, for example, in the EU and China, they're announcing a slowdown in their economy while ours is booming at 4.1%. Why is that? Because they're starting to feel the tariff impact, and that's why Donald Trump has done a terrific job of understanding what where the leverage is on this front. And the tax cut piece, the initiative that was passed, the legislation that was passed last year, was the impetus for this kind of growth. We said it was going to happen. We knew it was going to happen because we know as free market believers that that is the best thing to do, and that the free enterprise system brings economic prosperity. And the saddest part, though, John, as you know too, the Democrats said, vote us back in office and we will take that all away from you.
First of all, they said it was crumbs. But now I'm trying to figure out, you know, for a small business owner, I'm trying to figure out what the Democrats' policy is. And I want to give them the benefit of the doubt because, look, in 2006 when they took over, Alfredo, if you go back to then, that was the last time they took over and her Nancy Pelosi stage left. But, I mean, it was clear, right? They wanted to get out of Iraq. They thought the war was a disaster. George Bush had no plan. I was opposed to the war, both wars, so that's a separate issue. So I kind of got it. Like, I got their message. I don't know what their message is now other than they don't like Trump's tweets. I don't get what their alternative is to this booming economy. Do you?
Well, and the funny thing is we know what the alternative is, and that was the Obama administration, right? And that didn't work too well, right? And so we have the difference. We know what their type of leadership is going to bring. So why we would ever want to bring that back is beyond me, first of all. But, you know, it was really interesting. Your question on what is their strategy with small business, I think, is a really great question. And one of the things, several years ago, I had a conversation out in D.C. with one of the top, think tank organizations out there and their leader there. And he said one thing that was very interesting, because I had the same question. I said, I just don't understand. What are Democrats thinking? Small business in this country represents 30 million small business owners that employ 60 million people. We're talking almost 100 million people, right, that are impacted by the success or failure of small business. And he said one really quick thing, which I went out in my head. I said, wow, this is incredible. He said, because they are small business owners are very difficult to control. They would rather have large businesses really succeed because they can control 2, 3, 4 large banks, right, the Democrats.
Right.
But they can't control 30 million small business owners. And that's why they don't actually want small business owners to succeed, because they can't control them.
I think you're absolutely right, because at the end of the day, they can't tell them what to do. And you know why I really love the Job Creators Network and what you've done. You guys are a nonpartisan organization. I want to just explain it to everybody. Mission is to educate employees of Main Street America so that you can protect the 85 million people who depend on the success of small business. And we talk about hiring and you talk about jobs. You know, Amazon will get the big play because they'll come into a certain area and they'll hire a bunch of people or the big companies. But that dwarfs, Alfredo, in comparison to the number of people that small businesses hire. It's not even close.
Two-thirds of new job growth is in the hands of small business owners. And I have to tell you that small business owner optimism is really sky high. About 3 years ago or so, we started a campaign called Bring Small Businesses Back, because when I was going around the country just talking to people, I realized one thing. They felt so discouraged, small business owners across this country. They basically would say it. I mean, sometimes I would be sitting at a table at a conference, and I could see tears starting to roll down their eyes because they were so devastated by the fact that they put their entire, many times their life savings, they would put their house on the line, right? And just for the government to continuously batter these small businesses between over-regulation and over-taxation, and then, frankly, the lack of access to capital and credit that took place because Dodd-Frank decimated over 2,000 community banks. A lot of these were rural banks that helped small business owners. Yep. They were ready to give up. I'm telling you, fast forward to today, that optimism is so high. They are ready to invest. We have on TaxCutsWork.com, we encourage everybody to go to that site to really find out what is the truth in terms of what's going on with the economy, and especially on our small business owners. We have over 3,500 stories. That's 3,500 stories from small business owners already that are coming and saying, we want to tell our story about how things are working for us. These are everyday small business owners, Main Street America, talking about how it's helping them. According to the mainstream media, none of this is occurring. Which is just really, we ran an ad saying they're operating a bizarro world here.
I mean, it's just crazy what they're doing. But you're so right, and I want to encourage our listeners, go to TaxCutsWork.com, TaxCutsWork.com, and you can check your savings right there. You can actually plug your numbers in. You're going to get a feel of what your taxes are going to be. But, I mean, you're so right, Alfredo. And, by the way, we're with Alfredo Ortiz. He is the president and CEO of the Job Creators Network and of his website, TaxCutsWork.com. This is a nonpartisan organization promoting small businesses. And, by the way, there's over 29 million small business owners in the United States, and they employ 56 million people, meaning 85 million Americans depend on small businesses. Just think about that number and how it is. And even, look, I run a small business. I've got two full-time employees. I've got a bunch of vendors that really depend on us. And the tax cut for us has allowed me, Alfredo, to invest in new equipment. I mean, we just this year, for example, we bought a new remote system. We've got a second one and several of them that allows me to go virtually anywhere in the world. Now I also have a portable satellite internet unit that we were able to buy. So I've got that. So I can go and broadcast anywhere in the world, and all combined, that was probably $15,000. Right. But the thing is, I can write all of it off in 2018. I don't have to wait over a 5-year period. So it's little things like that. That allows me to buy that. We're looking at bringing a new person.
And John, if I could run for 1 second, because that one little piece there that you just mentioned is probably one of the most impactful things that we've felt so far from the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, is this idea of immediate expensing, the idea of being able to immediately write off. Because in the past, you'd have to depreciate it over a certain amount of time, right? You could only maybe 5 years or 7 years, 10 years, 15 years, right, depending on what you were buying. But that is so big. Like you just said, $15,000 right off the top that you would not have been able to do, and you probably wouldn't have made that investment. Just like you, I was doing a TV interview. I went to a studio that was a satellite studio, and it was just a private business. They were running that. And I started talking to him about the tax cuts. He goes, that has been so great. He goes, I've been able to invest in a new panel that I've been waiting for years to do. Couldn't really afford it, but because of this immediate expensing, I went out and got it, and I can do it right away. There was another lady who's part of our network, our Job Creators Network, HM Manufacturing, Nicole Walter, great CEO of this company, employs 16 people, and she is out going to buy a $500,000 piece of equipment. It's a $3.5 million company, but she believes she's going to be able to double the size of her business because of that one purchase. And she said the biggest reason and the only reason she really did it is because of the immediate expensing and what was done in the actual Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So this has an enormous impact on the economy. Nobody's really talking about it in the mainstream media. That's why we have to get this message out, John.
Well, look, there's no question about it, because if you're a small business owner, you really understand it. And we don't have $15,000 or $20,000 to throw around. We were able to make that investment because of the tax cut and then write it off. So it all worked. And that gives us the ability to expand our business, go to more places, be a better show for our listeners, get more revenue. And then we're looking at, you know, adding a third full-time person on in 2019, which is another job, another person paying taxes and benefits. I mean, you know, all this stuff is critical. Now, we're with Alfredo Ortiz. He is the president and chief executive officer of the Job Creators Network, and where he has led the defense of small businesses from the onslaught of bad government policies. One other thing, Alfredo, that I want to mention, if there's any small business owner, and when I say small business, if you're driving Lyft or Uber, that's a small business, right? I mean, it doesn't mean that you have to. It's a small business. And one of the other things that nobody is taking into consideration is if you own a small business today, you get a 20% pass-through credit. Now, what that means is, let's say you're a driver for Lyft, and I take Lyft. Let's say you're a driver for that, and you make, I don't know, expenses and everything. You make $80,000, all right? Well, you're not going to get taxed on 80 the way you were in 2017. You're going to get taxed on 64,000, because when you pass through the 80, 20% savings comes right off the top. So instead of paying taxes on 80,000, you save 16, you're paying taxes on 64,000, but you made 80. I mean, that is a huge difference that nobody even talks about.
You know, John, you hit another great point there. I mean, and that's, again, we need to keep talking about that. That's why we're collecting these kinds of stories on TaxCutsWork.com so that we can really tell the American public what is actually happening, real-life stories of American small businesses across this country, how they're using this, how they're reinvesting back in their businesses. Because, again, according to mainstream media, this is like the worst thing ever that's ever happened, right? It's like they are completely ignoring all the positive facts that are coming here. But that 20% pass-through deduction that you just mentioned for Main Street small businesses really is a major factor for them, and it is able to create an environment for them where they can reinvest back in their business. Right? Any small business owner understands what it's like to invest in their business and the risks that they take. So any kind of opportunity where you have to really take some of that and reinvest it back. I mean, this is what the government used to take from them.
Right.
So now that money's coming back to them so they can reinvest, just like you did, right? You decided how to use that money to reinvest back in your business,
right?
To get some additional equipment so that you can generate additional revenue. You basically sounds like you're going to increase your hiring by 50%, right? You have two, you're going to hire one. That's a 50%
increase. 50% increase.
I mean, it's
Mike will be so happy.
Yeah, exactly. So we do have to keep talking about this. And the one thing, even last year, people said, oh, it's not enough for our small business owners. We always said it wasn't a perfect bill, and we can do more, and we are advocating for more for our small business owners. But what an amazing first step. That was the deepest cut that small business owners from a tax perspective have felt in over 40 years.
And that's why the economy is booming right now. And the tax cut hasn't even taken place yet. That's the thing. It's all speculative. So even our investment was made on 2018, what we think is going to happen. Once 2018 comes along and our taxes go down on the same income dramatically, and it's dramatic for a small company like ours, then there's going to be extra money there. What are we going to do with it? Well, we're not going to put it in the mattress, right? We're going to buy something else, hire someone, expand something else. We're going to do something, increase our travel. If we do that, more airlines get paid.
Right.
I mean, that is how the thing works, and that's why we're so excited about it. Hey, I've only got 2 minutes. I want to get to the op-ed that you did the other day on trade, and this is why, Alfredo, we get along so great. You're a free trader. I'm not. I am a protectionist, and some people want to call it strategic trade. I'm not afraid of the P word. I'm for tariffs. I'm a protectionist. I have been for a very long time. But you made a great point the other day as a free trader, you said, because the economy is doing so great, if we're going to fix these trade deals, now's the time.
That's right, John. It's what every business person actually does with their business. Well, you described it right now yourself for your business, right? When times are good, that's when you take the opportunity to invest back in your business. And that is exactly what President Trump decided to do with tariffs. It was a massively broken system for decades. And nobody wanted to really do something, right? People always said, oh, we're going to fix this, we're going to fix that. Nobody ever did anything about it. President Trump knew that he would have had a positive economy on his hands that could afford a little bit of a hit, right, so that they can reinvest, so we could reinvest back in our economy and fix a very, very broken trade system across the globe. And the one thing he really understands, and this is very, very clear, he understands the power of leverage. Mm-hmm. He understands that the United States, as the largest consumption economy, has the ability to use that leverage to make things happen and to make the right trade deals happen. And you see already the EU and China are already, EU came to us basically, and they started, renegotiating stuff. We got President Trump having them buy soybeans from us to basically say, screw you, China. You want to raise your tariffs on us on soybeans? Well, then I'm going to go to the EU and have the EU buy the soybeans. We don't need you. Mm-hmm. And so, but again, this was the opportunity that President Trump took to reinvest back in his business. And he knows very well that there are people out there that are hurting from it. And that's why he got the $12 billion in aid for our farmers. And he's just saying, please just hang in there with me. We've got the economy humming. We've got to get this right. And, I think, the American farmers are saying, President Trump, we understand what you're doing. We understand it. It does hurt a little bit. It stings. But we're standing next to you, and we're standing with you on this one. And that is the one thing that we wrote in that op-ed. This is exactly the time to do it. You invest back in your business when times are good. And that's what President Trump is doing as a good chief executive officer of our country.
That's right.
He's investing back into the economy and back into the American worker. And that's why
I got to take off. We're at the bottom of the hour. I got to take off. Alfredo Ortiz. Thank you. Hey, more information, taxcutswork.com, taxcutswork.com. Joining us now on the John Fredericks Radio Network, Walter Jones, Republican, 3rd District, North Carolina. He says he's going to retire, but we're going to talk him out of it. That's right. We're going to talk him out of it. He doesn't want to retire. He has too much fun up here. He has too much fun. Congressman Jones, I can't even say that with a straight face. Congressman Jones, great to have you with us, sir.
Well, John, thank you, and you and I both know you told the young intern to beware of when he leaves the office of the swamp, and the swamp has alligators and snakes in it, and therefore I am always fighting this alligators and snakes, and they're growing by the day.
They really are growing by the day, and that's why you've got to lock the door, right? You cannot leave the door open.
I understand.
Lock the door. Okay, so I want to talk about this article that came out in Bloomberg, sir, if I may. The Treasury Department predicted the U.S. government's borrowing needs in the second half of this year will jump to the most since the financial crisis a decade ago. And the department expects to issue, get this, $330 billion in net marketable debt from July through September. This is the fourth largest total for that quarter on record and higher than the $273 billion estimated in April. And there seems to be no end in sight. What's the deal here?
Well, John, I have said on your show many times, in my humble opinion, very few in Washington, both parties included, care about the growing debt and the growing deficit. The article you just made reference to, which subtitled, The Boost Comes as Tax Cuts, Spending Hike Inflate the Deficit. The deficit next year is projected to be $1 trillion. And there are few people like you that would bring it up. I think that the president, whether it be a Democrat or Republican, has never let the growing debt and deficit be a factor in their leadership, and I think that is wrong, either party.
So the deficit, just so that everyone knows, the current year deficit, not the national debt, which is over $20 trillion, the deficit in this fiscal totaled $607 billion through the first 9 months of the fiscal year that ends September 30th. All right, so we got $607 billion in debt for the first 9 months. This was compared with $523 billion from the same period a year earlier. Now, the Congressional Budget Office in late June predicted the total government spending would exceed revenue this fiscal year by over $800 billion and by $1 trillion in 2020. $1 trillion. So that just keeps adding to the debt, right? So if the debt is 19, you add a trillion, that's 20. You add another trillion, it's 21. At what point does Congress say, okay, this is a catastrophe for us? It's the edge of economic Armageddon. We have to do something about it. How high does it have to be, sir?
John, I don't think the right people in America are concerned as they should be about it. I asked my staff, after the president talked about $18 billion to bail out our farmers, where's the money coming from? We continue to bail out and spend more money in Afghanistan. You got my report from the Inspector General that says that 27% of all the money being spent for reconstruction in Afghanistan, 27% goes to waste, fraud, and abuse. I mean, where's the outrage on that by Congress?
Nothing.
We keep spending money like we know we're not broke. Well, Congress, we're broke.
So I've asked this to Tim Kaine, Mark Warner. I've asked it to Democrats and Republicans, both sides of the aisle. What number do you hit the panic button? Is it obviously, I mean, remember when we were talking about approaching $15 trillion and, you know, that was the magic number, and now it's $20 trillion. What number is it, 25? Or is there even a number where somebody is going to say, you know, we just can't do this anymore?
Well, I asked Ron Paul, because he's been a dear friend of mine for years, and he's been a deficit hawk. I said, Ron, let's talk about the debt. What do you think would be the wake-up call for America? He said, Walter, I don't really know. He said, I think that when we get close to $30 trillion, it's going to collapse.
So the collapse number is $30 trillion. Now,
well, we're at $23 trillion now.
We're at 23 now.
Yeah, and I think that was Ron Paul's opinion. He said, I don't know for sure what the top line is before the collapse comes. He said, but if when you start getting close to $30 trillion in debt, he said, I think a lot of the international markets are going to get shaky.
So let me just ask you this. Part of the president's economic plan is to expand the economy or get all these people that weren't working, get new companies, small businesses opening up, paying taxes, to increase the total number, the total amount of revenue coming in. Kind of the old Arthur Laffer curve philosophy, cut rates, grow the pie. At a certain point, you get more revenue. But can we get enough revenue, Congressman Walter Jones, to grow our way out of this? Or at some point, are we just going to have to start to cut spending?
John, I think it's going to be primarily cutting spending. That's something we've never done since I've been in Congress, was to cut spending significantly. Here we are spending, $700, $800 billion, passed the bill last week for the military. Well, let's start cutting the waste and fraud and abuse out of the DOD budget. I've talked to General Mattis about it. I think he is sincerely trying to do it. But every year we give them more money and you get more waste, fraud, and abuse. I'm for a strong military. But somebody's got to start speaking about the waste in DOD.
But what your colleagues are telling us is that when I talk to them, is that so high of a percentage of the money that we spend is just institutional spending, like it's entitlements, that you would have to reform the entire Medicaid system, Medicare, Social Security, welfare, all that. Like this big percentage of the money we spend is untouchable, and so discretionary spending is really only a small percentage of that. How do you react to that?
You know what, Mike? Let's start with...
Talk Radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Ron DeRockstra. President Trump headlining another Make America Great Again rally, this time in Lewis Center, Ohio. When Mr. Trump takes the stage at Olentangy High School later tonight, he's expected to endorse GOP State Senator Troy Balderson in Tuesday's election for the 12th District congressional seat. Portland, Oregon police manning a weapon screening locations at the entrances to the site of a planned protest by a right-wing group. The protest by the Patriot Prayer Organization is scheduled at a Portland park. Self-described anti-fascist counter-protesters also rallying. Police are promising a heavy presence as previous encounters between the two groups have turned violent. President Trump signed into law a bill that protects Montana's East Rosebud Creek as a vital, wild, and scenic river. A designation for the Stillwater River Tributary, the first for a state waterway in 42 years. This is SRN News.
Download WBOB's mobile app for free from your app store. Powered by Duval County Judicial Candidate Kimberly Sadler.
When our health insurance renewal notice arrived last fall, my wife and I made the decision to drop our plan. With the monthly premiums and deductible, we'd have to pay $30,000 just to use it. So we did our homework and switched to MediShare. The cost savings are incredible, over $500 a month, and we don't have to pay for services we don't need or don't agree with. Then, out of the blue, she had to have emergency surgery. Scary stuff. $150,000 in hospital bills, and MediShare members took care of everything. All we paid was our small portion. I'm a doctor who's been in healthcare for 20 years, and this is one of the most impressive programs I've ever seen. Thank God she's fully recovered. And now we're telling everyone about MediShare.
Call 877-64-BIBLE to find out how much you can save on your healthcare. MediShare. Call 877-64-BIBLE. That's 877-64-BIBLE.
Anytime is a great time to give flowers to the ones you love. At Kuhn Flowers, we know that all too well. That's why we offer the longest-lasting, most beautiful floral arrangements in Jacksonville. Kuhn Flowers has the perfect flower arrangements for birthdays, holidays, good days, and even bad days. Show that special someone just how much you care with a gift of flowers from Kuhn Flowers. Call us today at 398-8601. That's 398-8601. Or shop online anytime at kuhnflowers.com.
Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church, invites you to worship with them. 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study. 10:45 a.m. Sunday, expository preaching of God's Word. 7 p.m. Sunday, expository preaching of God's Word. 7 p.m. Wednesday, Bible Q&A with fellowship meal. They're located at 12021 Old St. Augustine Road in the heart of Mandarin, just 1 mile south of I-295.
WBOB is your election authority. The Florida primaries take place on Tuesday, August 28th. WBOB will cover the election results starting at 7 p.m. Ed Dean, Roger Henderson, and other special guests will be on hand to follow the results and talk to both the winners and the losers. Your vote matters. Follow how it affects the primaries. August 28th, starting at 7 p.m. WBOB. The latest traffic and weather on WBOB, your 2018 election authority.
Traffic slow on I-95 southbound in St. Johns County because of a crash at the ramp to the International Golf Parkway. Be careful there. Also a crash in U.S. 17 in Clay County, northbound at Eagle Harbor Parkway. And another accident, Nassau County, I-95 southbound, just beyond the Welcome Center, could slow you down. Mostly sunny this afternoon. Enjoy it. 90 degrees now in Jacksonville. Talk Radio, WBOB.
Great to have you with us today. No gibberish, no nonsense. We're live today at your nation's capital. Corey Lewandowski, National, International, Milky Way headquarters at the embassy. Corey is with us here. That's our studio right here in Washington, D.C. by the Capitol. Great to have you with us. No gibberish and no nonsense coming your way. And before I get started, I want to thank all of our new listeners from around the country and around the globe today. One thing I want you to do, you got to do this, got to buy Corey's book because it is so cool. And if you don't read it, you're going to be like, oh, man, I can't believe I didn't read that book. You can get it at B. Dalton, Amazon, if you don't like them, your favorite bookstore. Let Trump Be Trump. Great summer read. In fact, I read it two times. The second time was even better than the first time. Great book, Let Trump Be Trump. And Corey's with us now. Corey Lewandowski, former campaign manager, Donald Trump for President campaign, in his own office with me at our headquarters. Great to have you.
Hey, John. How are you this morning?
It's great to be at the embassy here, Corey, as always. People are always very intrigued about this. And, of course, now since we've been broke into, I do lock the door now when I come in at 5:30 a.m., which I didn't do the other time, so I'm sorry for that. Let's get to tonight. You're going to a big rally with the president in Tampa. You're flying on Air Force One. This thing is going to be packed. I've heard that it's going to be one of the biggest rallies they've had, overflowing crowds. They can't even handle the people they got coming in. Plus, Florida, a big state. You got Governor Scott running for U.S. Senate. He's got the lead there. You got a governor's race. I bet you're really excited about tonight.
Well, Florida, as you know, is really the president's second home. It's where he spends a lot of his time. It's a state that delivered enormous numbers in the primary, where he won almost every county in what was a very contested Republican primary. When he was running for president, he won the state of Florida overwhelmingly. Well, look, almost 2% when they said it couldn't be done. And now he's going back down there, and he's weighing in to a race for the governor because Ron DeSantis, who's a member of Congress, has been a person fighting the president's agenda every single day here in Washington. This president supported him early last December, tweeted about him again in June, and is going to Tampa tonight to do a rally to remind the people of Florida that there is a clear difference when it comes to candidates who support the president and those who don't support the president. And President Trump is going down there to tell the people of Florida of the accomplishments he's achieved since he's been in office, but also asking them to support Governor Rick Scott for the U.S. Senate and Congressman Ron DeSantis for the governor's race.
Well, DeSantis has been an advocate of the president. He's been an enthusiastic supporter of his policies, running for governor there against Adam Putnam, who's the agriculture commissioner. That's really not done much. Now, we've seen, Corey, what happens when the president weighs in. I mean, you go to the Georgia governor's race, you know, two pretty solid conservatives, and Brian Kemp, the Secretary of State, and Casey Cagle, who was a 16-year lieutenant governor. At the last minute, the vice president and then the president weighing in for Brian Kemp in the final days, and they had a 40-point swing in the polls and the election in 3 days. Corey, that's unheard of. Cagle had the lead the entire time up to the final 3 days, and then he gets beat by 40 points. I mean, you can't underestimate the power of the president with his backing in the Republican Party.
And, John, you have to remember the Republicans, by and large, are supporting this president, his agenda, with over 90%. It is historic numbers.
Unheard of.
Nobody, not Barack Obama, not Bill Clinton from their parties, nobody has received the type of support from the base, if you will, from any president until Donald Trump has come in. So his endorsements are so important. Look, it is very easy to argue that Ron DeSantis was going to lose that race if he didn't get endorsed by the president. Adam Putnam, when he announced he was going to run for governor, everybody just assumed it was his race to win. Now that Donald Trump is coming in, supported Congressman DeSantis, it looks to be very clear that if the election were held today, Ron would be the Republican nominee for governor moving forward. That is the power of the Trump endorsement. We've seen it in South Carolina with Katie Arrington, who challenged an incumbent Republican Congressman Mark Sanford, who was against the president's agenda. This is the power of the Trump endorsement. It is the power of the Republicans, who are so happy with the agenda of smaller government, lower taxes, less regulation, great federal judges, two potential Supreme Court justices now before the end of this year that he'll have the opportunity to get through Congress, and so many other things, great trade deals for the United States for a change. This is why the Republicans are supporting this president with over 90% on a regular basis.
Which has been unprecedented. I mean, to get that level of support from the Republicans. Let's get to the Mueller situation now. And more, I guess you can call it nonsense, coming out of Michael Cohen. Yesterday, Rudy Giuliani on CNN. I didn't think he did a very good job, to be honest. I couldn't really follow what he was saying. But Michael Cohen now saying that the president was aware of the fact that he had this meeting in Trump Tower with an official from the Russian government or an oligarch or a lawyer where they said they didn't have it, but he didn't have it on tape. He can't corroborate it. What is the deal with this guy?
Look, I can tell you this, John, because I was there at the time that that meeting transpired. Okay, I was still running the campaign. And what I know is I knew nothing about the meeting. And if Donald Trump, as candidate Trump, would have been made aware that that meeting was transpiring, he would have turned to me and said to me, hey, Corey, what do you think of this? He and I never had that conversation, which leads me to believe he was never told that this meeting transpired either beforehand or afterwards, and only found out about it through the public records, which is what has been now said. Michael Cohen clearly has an axe to grind against this man, which I don't understand why. Michael used, you know, the president to enrich himself. We've seen this now that he went to these major corporations, whether it was Novartis or AT&T or so many others, and said, you will pay me, I will have access to the president. And what we've seen across the board is Michael did nothing for these companies. He locked them into contracts. He made a lot of money. And what he's being investigated for from the Southern District of New York is probably for tax evasion, wire fraud, mail fraud, something of that nature. So he is trying to cover himself by trying to go after the president for things which we know are not true. And I don't understand, because this is a man who not that long ago said, I would take a bullet for Donald Trump. Well, all of a sudden, he's in a jam because he didn't follow the rules, and now he wants to blame somebody else for it. This is why nobody ever trusted Michael Cohen when they worked with him.
We're with Corey Lewandowski, former campaign manager for the Donald Trump for President campaign. It is 46 past the hour. You're on the John Fredericks Radio Network. Corey, this is interesting now. You were the campaign manager at the time that meeting took place. You were very close to the president as campaign manager. You talked to him throughout almost every single day. Manafort, who was at the meeting, he was in charge of hunting of the delegate situation. He was not running the day-to-day operations of the campaign, right? So he had a very different role at that time. So wouldn't it stand the reason if the president did know about a meeting that would have had to do with his campaign, not with selecting national delegates from Colorado, which ostensibly was Manafort's job when he came in. He didn't do a very good job there either, by the way. But it's really inconceivable, being that I talk to you several times a week during the whole campaign, it's inconceivable to me that the president would have come to you and said, what do you think of this meeting? Or I need you to be there, or I'm going to the meeting at 2 p.m. or whatever, or I've approved the meeting. It's inconceivable to me that you wouldn't not have been brought in on that loop, because he ran all that stuff by you 100% of the time, did he?
He did, John, and I'll tell you, it wasn't just Corey Lewandowski, but you know the other people who were around the candidate at the time, Hope Hicks, Dan Scavino, Keith Schiller, you know, the people who really made up the core of the team, Michael Glassner, right? None of us, to the best of my knowledge, were ever made aware of the meeting, and we were doing direct, daily, multiple times a day communication with candidate Trump. Never, to the best of my knowledge, did he ever say to any of us who were involved in the decision-making of the campaign, do you think this meeting should occur? And that tells me that he was never made aware of the meeting. He never gave permission to have the meeting occur. And look, Michael Cohen was never part of the campaign. He tried to be part of the campaign, but nobody wanted him to be part of the campaign. And so he was ostracized for a lot of reasons, because everything he touched was basically a disaster. So his office was on the 26th floor. The campaign was right on the 5th floor of Trump Tower, sometimes on the 14th floor of Trump Tower. But Michael had no formal role in the campaign. So for him to intimate or to state unequivocally that the president was made aware of something that had to do with the campaign that Michael would have known about, I think it's just a fallacy, because if the president would have been made aware of this, the candidate would have been made aware of it, he would have brought that to my attention, to Hope's attention, to Dan Scavino's attention, to somebody who was a decision maker at the campaign on a regular basis, and we would have been notified. And that never occurred, to the best of my knowledge. So I find it very difficult to believe that Michael was made aware of this ahead of time. And now, only months later, when Michael is in legal jeopardy, has decided to bring out a story which is no way to corroborate or to prove. And so now you're forced to disprove a negative. And I think it's very unfair to the president.
coupled with the fact that he was not officially part of the campaign, so why would he even have knowledge of it? I guess that's my question.
Well, it's a great
point. I mean, he was not the campaign lawyer either, so why would he even have knowledge of it?
Look, I don't think he did is my point, John. So, you know, I think Michael is trying to rewrite history. You know, the campaign attorney who would have been looped into this if a discussion would have happened was Don McGahn, and now he's the White House counsel. I have not spoken to Don about this issue, but I don't think he was ever made aware of a potential meeting. And so, look, that meeting that transpired was for a very small period of time with a very select group of people, and to the best of my knowledge, candidate Trump was not made aware of the meeting prior to the meeting and not made aware of the meeting post the meeting. And to the best of my knowledge, he's never met with the individuals who were part of that meeting. The campaign leadership was never part of that. Paul Manafort attended that meeting. Don Jr. attended the meeting. But look, I don't know why Michael Cohen would have anything to do with the meeting. It had nothing to do with Trump Tower business. He had nothing to do with the campaign. He was never a member of the campaign. He never provided legal counsel to the campaign. So I don't know. But now what Michael is saying is you have to disprove a negative. I know that Donald Trump knew that is what he's saying. And now it's impossible to go back. But what we have seen from Michael is he has lied for his own benefit time and time and time again. And that's a pattern that I think is going to continue to move forward with.
But unequivocally, Corey Lewandowski had no knowledge of this meeting.
The first time I was ever made aware of this meeting, John, was when the public record came out sometime, I think, in June or July of last year that this meeting actually transpired. I never knew about it.
So it's very difficult having talked to you so many times a week during the campaign. It's inconceivable to me that the president, then candidate Trump, would have been aware of this meeting and you wouldn't have. It's inconceivable to me, or Hope, or Dan, or all of them. And no one was, and it just comes out of the blue. I don't buy it.
I don't either, and that's why I have to call into question Michael's statements once again. Right? You know, what we've seen from Michael now is a continuous pattern of doing things that are benefiting himself, whether it's enriching himself by trying to profiteer off of his relationship with the president, telling companies that he could go and get things done for them, you know, acquiring these massive contracts of, you know, hundreds of thousands or in some cases millions of dollars to tell companies that they need to pay him so he can get things done. Look, Michael did things that profited and benefited Michael Cohen that weren't helpful to the campaign, that weren't helpful to the president, that is he's now in trouble for and will have to answer for to the Southern District of New York. But I was never made aware of the meeting. I find it impossible to believe that then-candidate Trump told Michael ahead of time, yes, not only do I know about the meeting, but I'm aware of it and I want to go forward. I just don't believe that because Michael was not involved in the day-to-day operations of the campaign at all.
You're on the John Trotter's Radio Network, Trucking the Truth Across America, live in Washington, D.C. We're with Corey Lewandowski, former campaign manager, Donald Trump for president. Also, read Corey's book, Let Trump Be Trump. You can get it at your favorite bookstore or Amazon. Corey, let's get to the economy. 4.1% GDP growth on Friday. It wasn't long ago that we were told by President Obama and Democrats and economists that the new world economy had the U.S. at a 1% growth in perpetuity, that we just have to accept it, kind of like Jimmy Carter when he said, put a sweater on. That is what it is. And now we're getting 4% growth. It could get higher. We've got record employment, record low unemployment, more jobs today than applicants, another 600,000 people entering the job market that had stopped looking for work. The Trump economy and Trumponomics, how do the Democrats even argue with the success that we've had?
Well, John, you have to remember, it's not just the Democrats who are arguing. It's the never-Trumpers, the haters, who, when he was a candidate and he said, I can get the economy growing again, give me an opportunity, we'll get to 4%. Most major media outlets, you know, from the Huffington Post to the Washington Post to all of these outlets, the New York Times said, this is a fallacy. It's a farce. There's no way he can do it. It will never happen. 1.2% is the new normal. We've seen the never Trumpers just recently writing publications, writing articles saying that this has nothing to do with the tax cuts that this president has put in place. This is actually a holdover from the Obama administration. These guys live in a fantasy world. What this president does and what he has been able to do for the last year and a half is create an environment for businesses to look long-term and say, I'm willing to reinvest in capital improvement projects again. I'm willing to make major purchases. I'm willing to hire more people. I'm willing to expand my business because they see that the direction of the country is something that is America first. It's buy America, hire American, right? That's what this president has talked about. And so if you're a chief executive officer or you're a small business owner and you're trying to look a year down the road or 2 years down the road, you're asking yourself, is this a good time to reinvest in my company? Because under the Obama years, when you were barely surviving, when you had to go out and take out loans on your credit cards because you couldn't get a bank loan, right? Those days are over. Banks want to lend money now. The housing market is still booming. Right. The stock market is booming. And people are saying, hey, I've got more disposable income today than I did a year ago or 2 years ago. Let's reinvest that in my business. Let's hire more people. Let's take a chance. Let's start a new business. That is what this presidency has created. And you couple that with the deregulation, and I mean by cutting government bureaucracy on small businesses who are just getting crushed, and you see this economy taking off like no one expected, and that's a tribute to what this president has done and the sheer will of his power to move the economy in the right direction.
And so as a result of that, we've got a very tight House races coming up. Some are predicting that the Democrats are going to win in a blue wave. People like me are saying, I think the Republicans are going to hang on by maybe two or three. Every week it changes. How do you see it now?
So, John, again, we go back to the 41 open seats that the Republicans have to defend because we've got a number of members of Congress who are retiring. Then we look at some of the districts like Barbara Comstock in Northern Virginia, which is a seat that, you know, the Democrats have targeted, and others. Again, if the election were held today, I think we're literally at a coin flip. The economy continues to improve. We see a growth like 4.1%. That fires up the Republican base to say we need to keep Republicans in Congress to work to cut taxes because not one Democrat in this country voted for the president's tax cuts.
Right.
We've seen the president say just last week he wants to have tax cuts 2.0 in place soon. That's important. And if we can get those things done, then the Republicans deserve the opportunity to come back in the majority. But let me say, John, this president has also said immigration is a priority. I want the money to fund the wall. We have to stop illegals from coming into the country, and we have to have a strong national security. That also has to occur. So as voters go to the ballot box, they're going to have a great opportunity this November, and they're going to have the opportunity to vote for socialist Democrats who think that everything should be free. The redistribution of wealth is where they want to go.
Right.
Or they can vote with the Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi wing of the Democratic Party. Or they can return back to Congress those conservatives who are saying, we want you to be able to control more of your money. We're going to make sure national security is a priority. And if this election is about Donald Trump on the ballot, then the Republicans hold the House and they expand their majorities in the Senate.
I think you're absolutely right. Let's get to two races. Florida, Rick Scott, incumbent. Former astronaut, Democrat Bill Nelson. You're going there tonight. What do you think?
I think Rick Scott is going to win that race by probably 53, 47 or bigger. It's going to be a bigger margin than people want to think about. Governor Scott is an exceptionally good candidate. He has done amazing work in Florida. His numbers with Hispanics, with African Americans are through the roof compared to where Republicans stand generically. And so I think you're going to see Governor Scott win. He wants this race. He's going to self-fund this race by and large. And he is a hard worker, and he's got a strong record to stand on from his work in Tallahassee. Governor Scott's going to win by 6 points.
Okay, final one, Nevada. Dean Heller trying to hang on. A lot of people thinking this is going to be the one almost sure Democratic pickup. What do you see?
Tough state in Nevada. It has turned much more blue than it has in the past. Dean Heller had a blip on the radar screen when he was against the president's agenda at first. He's now fully on board. That race is going to come down to where the economy is on election day, where unemployment is on election day, and how things are going in that state specifically. Dean Heller can hang on to that race, but he's going to have to work hard, and he's out doing that.
All right, so predictions today as of July 31st as we get into the August recess. I'm predicting net gain, Republican Senate plus 5. How about you?
I think a net gain in the Republican Senate of at least 3. I feel very optimistic about 3. It could be 4. And I go back, and I said this last week, John, the sleeper race in the country is the New Jersey Senate race.
Oh,
we have a chance
on
to win that. I know people don't believe me. Look, I've been talking about it now for a couple of weeks, and maybe I shouldn't, but that's an opportunity. I think we're going to win in Indiana. You know, I saw the Koch Network now refuses to help Kramer in North Dakota.
What is up with that? What is up with the Koch network?
It's amazing to me, John. You know, in all fairness and full disclosure, I spent 7 years working for that organization,
Americans
trying
for
to help
prosperity.
And trying to do what was right. But they have such a visceral disdain for this president, right? Because he doesn't need their money. He doesn't need their influence. He won't bow to what they want, the globalist nature of some of their trade ideas. And so this president is said today he's disappointed in the Koch network. They should come out. And look, you go back and you look at the Koch network, they're a fraction of the size they used to be. Their major donors are thankful because their businesses are growing every day under the Trump administration. And when they had the opportunity to support the Trump administration in the primary in 2016, they said no. In the general election, they said no. And now they're out actively campaigning against Congressman Kramer in North Dakota to be Senator Kramer. That's disappointing.
Well, they've also said that there's a lot of races they would sit out. They don't back a lot of the president's agenda. And look, I've had American for Prosperity people on my show forever, where both of us are very good friends with Tim Phillips. He had to go to Colorado Springs the other day and make a speech saying that they were not going to get involved in these key races. And you were there a while, right? You were there for five years,
John.
You were there a seven-year period. I mean, that was your career. That's how we met back then. Very disappointing. And it's like they can't seem to get out of the never-Trumper mindset. They keep expecting him to fail. He isn't going to fail. Where do they go from here?
Well, John, it's amazing because if you look at what they were supposed to stand for, which is smaller government, lower taxes, less regulation, you know, by and large, they were big supporters of the Tea Party movement in 2010, right? This president has done everything that agenda was supposed to be about, which is reducing the government burden, giving more economic opportunity, you know, cutting our trade deficits, making sure that we have free trade and fair trade, right? That's what they stood for. They hate this president because he's been successful, right? And when you have success, you have nothing to go against anymore, right? So they have to have a foil. And so to me, it's very disappointing that members of the Koch family and by extension the Koch network want to go against this president's agenda because our economy is booming. They had opportunities in the past, and they didn't capitalize on it. They had opportunities when Bush was in the White House, and they didn't capitalize on it. They had opportunities when Clinton was in the White House. They didn't capitalize. When Obama was in the White House, they didn't capitalize. For the first time in 30 years, they have a president who's coming in and fulfilling the promises that he outlined when he campaigned. And now they're saying it's not good enough. If they want to support Heidi Heitkamp, they're entitled to do that. But they have to remember what that means. She voted against tax cuts for working men and women every single day. She had the opportunity to go out and support the president's tax cuts, the largest tax cuts in our nation's history. And they vote against it, which tells me the Kochs are against tax cuts. And that's shameful.
Okay, we're out of time. But final question. Your boss was Tim Phillips, now their president. He was in Colorado Springs making a speech yesterday. If you had one message to Tim right now, what would it be as your former boss?
Tim, get on the president's agenda. This is a president who is moving our country in the right direction. We need all oars rowing in the same direction. I don't understand what part of this agenda. Is it he's cut too many regulations? Is it he's created too many jobs? Is it that he has moved the stock market into new territory? Is it that the unemployment rate for Hispanics and African Americans are at the lowest in our nation's history ever recorded? Is it the housing market is taking off? What part of the agenda is it you don't like? Is it that he's standing up for Americans first and that the agenda is a pro-American agenda? Is that what you don't like? I don't understand. Let's articulate it. Let's debate it. Let's get on the stage and have that conversation. I like you, Tim, but you got to get on the president's team.
We're out of time. I want to thank Corey Lewandowski for being with us, former campaign manager Donald Trump for president. Corey, thank you. Hey, get Corey's book. It is so cool. Let Trump be Trump, be Dalton. Bookstore, your favorite bookstore, Amazon.com, wherever it is. Great book. Must read. Let Trump be Trump. Corey Lewandowski,